Chapter 39. Two hands were running under his shirt and up his back. He struggled to wake from a sound sleep, dreaming he was deep in the water, swimming upward toward the shimmering surface, but never able to reach it. He rubbed his eyes, saw he was still on the couch in his office, and rolled over, his gaze blocked by a pair of shapely legs. Pitt came to a sitting position and stared into Lily's beguiling eyes. He held up his wrist, but he had taken his watch off and placed it on the desk with his keys, change, and wallet. "What time is it?" he asked. 5:30, she replied sweetly, moving her hands across his shoulders and massaging his neck. "Night or day?" "Late afternoon. You only dozed off for 3 hours." "Don't you ever drop off?" "I can get by with only 4 hours sleep out of every 24. He yawned. "Your next husband has my deepest sympathy. Here's some coffee." She set a cup on an end table near his head. Pitt slipped on his shoes and tucked in his shirt tails. "Jaeger found anything?"
"Yes."
"The river?"
"No, not yet. Hiram is very mysterious about it, but he claims you were right. Venator sailed across the Atlantic before either the Vikings or Columbus."
He took a sip of the coffee and made a face. "This is almost solid sugar." Lily looked surprised. "Al said you always take 4 spoonfuls. "Al lied. I prefer it pure black with grounds on the bottom of the cup."
"I'm sorry," she said with an unremorseful smile. "I guess I was taken in by a practical joker."
"You're not the first," he said, staring out the door of his office. Giordino was seated with his feet on Jaeger's desk, devouring the last slice of a pizza while he studied a detailed topographic map of a shoreline. Jaeger sat with bloodshot eyes aimed at a computer monitor while jotting notes on a pad. He did not have to turn as Pitt and Lily entered the room. He could see their reflections in the screen. "We've made a breakthrough," he said with some satisfaction. Pitt asked, "What have you got?" "Instead of concentrating on every nook and cranny south from the Serapis' grave in Greenland, I leapfrogged down to Maine and began looking for a match-up of his landing description."
"And it paid off," Pitt said in anticipation.
"Yes. If you recall, Rufinus wrote that after they deserted Venator, they were battered by storms from the south for 31 days before finding a safe bay where they could make repairs to the ship. On the next leg of the voyage, more storms blew away the sails and tore off the steering oars. Then the ship drifted for an unspecified number of days before ending up in the Greenland fjord." Jaeger stopped and called up a chart of the American side of the North Atlantic on the monitor. Next, his fingers nimbly punched out a series of codes. A small line formed and began traveling southward from the east coast of Greenland south in a broken, zigzagged path around Newfoundland, past Nova Scotia and New England, ending at a point slightly above Atlantic City.
"New Jersey?" muttered Pitt, puzzled.
"Barnegat Bay, to be exact," said Giordino. He brought over the topographic map and laid it on a table. Then he circled a section of the coast with a red marker.
"Barnegat Bay, New Jersey?" Pitt repeated.
"The shape of the land was quite different back in 391," Jaeger lectured matter-of-factly. "The beach strand was more broken and the bay was deeper and more sheltered."
"How did you arrive at this exact spot?" asked Pitt.
"In describing the bay, Rufinus mentioned a great sea of dwarf-like pines where fresh water seeped from the sand with a jab of a stick. New Jersey has a forest of dwarf pines that fits the description. It's called the Pine Barrens, and it spreads across the southern center of the state bordering on the coast to the east. The water level is just under the surface. During spring runoff or after heavy rains, you can literally poke a hole in the sandy soil and strike water."
"Looks promising," said Pitt.
"But didn't Rufinus also say they added ballast stone?"
"I admit that had me baffled. So I put in a call to a geologist at the Army Corps of Engineers. He came up with a stone quarry that pinpointed almost the exact site where I believe the Serapis' crew landed."
"Nice job," said Pitt gratefully. "You've put the show on the right track."
"Where do we go from here?" asked Lily.
"I'll continue working south," answered Jaeger.
At the same time, I'll have my people compute an approximate trace of Venator's course west from Spain. With hindsight, it seems obvious the islands that made up the fleet's first landfall after leaving the Mediterranean were the West Indies. By continuing the Serapis's path from New Jersey and projecting Venator's track to the Americas, we should arrive at an approximate intersect within 500 miles of a river that fits the bill. Lily looked skeptical. I fail to see how you expect to trace Venator's track when he censored all accounts of heading, currents, winds, and distances.
No great flash, Jaeger replied dryly. I'll lift the log data from the voyages of Columbus to the New World, taking his computed course, and adjusting it for differences in hull design and water friction, rigging, and sail area between his ships and the Byzantine fleet 1,000 years earlier.
You make it sound simple.
Believe me, it's not. We may be homing in on the target, but it's going to take another solid 4 days of study to get us there.
The weariness and long hours of tedious study seemed forgotten. Jaeger's reddened eyes blazed with determination. Lily appeared to be galvanized with excess energy. They were poised for the starter's gun.
Do it, said Pitt. Find the library.
Pitt thought Sandecker sent for him for a status report on the search. But the instant he saw the somber expression on the Admiral's face, he knew there was a problem. What really bothered Pitt was the soft look in the Admiral's eyes. They were usually as hard as flint. Then, when Sandecker came over and took him by the arm and led him to a couch and sat down alongside, Pitt knew there was a problem.
"I've just received some disturbing news from the White House," Sandecker began. "The cruise ship that was hosting Presidents De Lorenzo and Hassan at the Economic Summit in Uruguay is suspected of being hijacked."
"I'm sorry to hear it," said Pitt, "but how does that affect Numa?"
"Hala Camille was on board."
"Damn!"
"And so was the Senator."
"My father?" Pitt muttered in surprise. "I talked to him by phone the night before last. How did he come to be in Uruguay?"
"He was on a mission for the president."
Pitt stood up, paced back and forth, and then sat down again.
"What's the situation?"
"The Lady Flamborough, the name of the British cruise liner, disappeared from the port of Punta del Este last night."
"Where is the ship now?"
"An extensive air search has yet to turn up a trace of her. The general consensus of the officials on the scene is that the Lady Flamborough lies at the bottom of the sea."
"Without absolute proof, I can't accept that."
"I'm with you."
"Weather conditions?"
"I gather from the report the area was fair with calm seas."
"Ships vanish in storms," said Pitt, "seldom in calm seas."
Sandecker made an empty gesture with his hands.
"Until more details come in, we can only speculate."
Pitt could not believe his father was dead. What he heard was too inconclusive.
"What is the White House doing about it?"
"The President's hands are tied."
"That's ridiculous," Pitt said sharply. "He could order all naval units in the area to assist in the search."
"That's the catch," said Sandecker. "Except for an occasional training exercise, none of which is occurring now, there are no United States naval units on station in the South Atlantic."
Pitt stood again and stared out the window at the lights of Washington. Then he fixed Sandecker with a penetrating stare.
"You're telling me the United States government is in no way involved with the search?"
"It looks that way."
"What's to stop Numa from searching?"
"Nothing, except we lack a fleet of Coast Guard vessels and an aircraft carrier."
"We have the Sounder."
Sandecker stared back thoughtfully for a moment. Then his face took on a questioning expression.
"One of our research vessels?"
"She's on a sonar mapping project of the continental slope off southern Brazil."
Sandecker nodded.
"All right, I get your drift, but the Sounder is too slow to be of any help on an extensive sea search. What do you expect to accomplish with her?"
"If my father's ship can't be found on the surface, I'll hunt for her below."
"You could be looking at 1,000 square miles, maybe more."
"The Sounder's sonar gear can cut a swath 2 miles wide, and she carries a submersible. All I need is your permission to take command of her."
"You'll need someone to back you up."
"Giordino and Rudy Gunn. We make a good team."
"Rudy is on a deep-sea mining operation off the Canary Islands." He could be in Uruguay in 18 hours.
Sandecker clasped his hands behind his head and stared at the ceiling. Deep down, he felt Pitt was chasing shadows, but he never doubted for an instant what his answer would be.
"Write your own ticket," he said in a level tone. "I'll back you."
"Thank you, Admiral," Pitt said. "I'm grateful."
"How does the Alexandria Library project stand?"
"Yeager and Dr. Sharp are close to a solution. They don't need Al and me getting in the way."
Sandecker rose and placed both his hands on Pitt's shoulders. "He may not be dead, you know."
"Dad better not be dead," Pitt said with a grim smile. "I'd never forgive him."